This is a tape recording made with Dr. Wood on June 11th, 1973. Dr. Wood, we had the opportunity of speaking some almost 2 years ago on your first 10, 11 years at the university. I wonder if we might just go back over some of the things and talk about the role or say the crisis of higher education since the last time we talked. Things have turned, it seems, in terms of higher education from a relatively well-off state to a state that the university has to justify more and more its existence and its demands on the people of Alaska.
I would say it hit a plateau. Are we on the level now? Are we? And your question was, what's happened to higher education?
Right, and the justification that the University of Alaska needs to make to the public.
It seems to me that higher education has reached a plateau in its development. The causes for this are numerous, and you can read in the literature about higher education in the United States as well as elsewhere in the world considerable on this topic. There is a change in public attitude, basically, that now emphasizes a fundamental point that a college education is really not needed for everyone. Now, this seems to be in contradiction to the point of view that educational opportunity should be made available to everyone. But they're not really in contradiction one to the other. What they're saying about no need for a college degree is quite different from saying that one must continue his learning as long as he is alive. Why is it now we're raising this question about the college degree? Well, frankly, we find that there are a great many positions which pay very, very well that are of a less than professional level and which really do not require the general type of education that one acquires as a part of his academic degree. What he needs for many jobs that pay quite well is some very highly specialized skills of a technical nature which can be acquired either through practical experience or through some very short training program that concentrates upon just the specifics related to that particular specialty. Now, there are other reasons why that the bloom is off the going to college matter. The fact that the Southeast Asian War has come to a close, the fact that the draft in the United States is about to end as of the 1st of July, it means that there is no longer any pressure to go to college to avoid something that is less pleasant. There is also a great affluence yet in the country, in spite of our economic reverses and our tremendous inflationary problem. This affluence simply means that young people so inclined can still go on their wanderjahr, if you please, a year of wandering around pretty much on their own without having any responsibility of work, and expect that they can get by somehow with that help that mother and dad will provide. And as I say, a tremendous number of young people are in this position now, and you see them everywhere. And in a sense, they're not going to college for a year or two after they complete their secondary level studies, because they can put off going to work a year or two without any further educational preparation of a classroom type. Now, this is really quite a big thing. Its dimensions are not yet known, but when I see the projections of enrollment figures around the country for this coming September, you realize that something very fundamental is happening. And apparently, the percentage of recent high school graduates going on to college is dropping by first indications by 40% to 50%. Now, at the other end of the the admission spectrum, if you please, the number of people who have been out of school for a year or two or six or eight or longer is sharply increasing, so that one tends to offset the other to a considerable measure, but not in precisely the same way. It isn't a one-to-one offset. It's an offset of the full-time youth preparing for a career against the part-time adult in a career who is taking one or two courses or short programs in order to upgrade himself in the career that he is in, or to change to another career slightly more attractive than the one he's in. Well, this is, I say, a very fundamental change, and we really don't know yet how to assess it. But I suspect that it is not an indication that society is discarding the institutions of higher learning, but that they are finding a variety of ways to make use of them rather than a typical single way of the past. In other words, they're looking for new delivery systems, even though the content is pretty much what it's always been. And on this, I believe a close examination will reveal that there's very little change in the ideas and the concepts which higher education today is presenting. There aren't very many ideas and concepts anyhow, maybe 150 that man's had since the beginning of historical time. And these, of course, are interpreted with each new generation a little bit different way, and they have variation in their applications, again, each generation. But fundamentally, the concepts, the ideas are pretty well unchanged. It's kind of like human nature. It doesn't change very much. The thing that changes it with exceeding rapidity are the techniques and the skills. And you learn one set of laboratory skills, and by the time you've learned it, it's out of date because we've got some new gadgetry, some new machines, some new ways of performing the tasks. So the skills and the techniques change very, very rapidly. So at a lesser pace do the attitudes, the understandings, the human relationships change, largely from what happens outside of institutions of learning rather than what happens inside of them. And these change. And so you get same ideas and concepts, different emphases, a little different arrangements, a little different applications. You get tremendously changed skills and techniques, and you get rather greatly changed attitudes, understandings, and human relationships. What then is the impact on higher education? It means that your delivery system has to be altered. It means that your packaging has to be altered from what it was in the past. The traditional, of course, brought you to a campus in a central place, September through June, Monday through Fridays, 8 o'clock till 4 in the afternoon. And you were more or less apart from society, even the community in which your institution was located on that hill, very prominent in that community. You were apart from the community, and now the idea is to take the education to the people where they are, That's the community college movement. It's a new distribution system. And to take it to them in packages that meet their daily routines. So we have mini courses, we have short courses, we have programs that last 6 months, a year, maximum 2 years perhaps. And we find that the community college is an ideal vehicle for this particular new packaging and new delivery system. Now, the next one, if you want to look ahead, I think undoubtedly involves the communication by satellite. I think we'll jump beyond the television stage. Radio is really a better instrument for education now. It's less limited than television. But once you get the satellite, I think that television will be the primary mode, because here you can take large parts of instruction into the home, and with rather inexpensive devices of the present and undoubtedly of the future, you can tape in some manner these programs and replay them on your own instruments at your convenience. And you don't have to be present when the program comes in over the satellite. You can turn on the automatic recorder and have it click off at a set time. And then when you want to use this program, you turn it on. It's your cassette tape, your player tapes, right, such as we have here. Now, I think that's coming. In no sense, however, will it replace institutions of learning of the traditional type, where people come for very special advantages of a campus experience with a great library, with a cluster of distinguished individuals that form a faculty, with associations that have really keen young minds working together mean so very much to the individual in his growth, intellectual growth. Nor will it replace the community college or the extension center in the community, in the smaller communities. It will be an augmentation, an extension, an enlargement. So that predict that in time virtually everybody in the adult community, the nation, will be involved in a continuing learning program. Again, let me repeat, this will not replace the traditional nor the new delivery system of the community college.
Dr. Wood, you've had a tenure as university president of some 13 years, which by current standards seems unusually long in terms of turmoil and disruptions on campus. What, in going back over, say, the academic program and the research program and some of the other programs that have developed under your tenure, do you think your specific, or say the more noticeable accomplishments or the more outstanding accomplishments that you take a great deal of pride in?
Here at the University of Alaska?
Yes, here.
Oh, yes. I think the most satisfying thing is the evolution, if you please, of both the faculty and of the instructional and research and public service programs, plus a great evolution also of the supporting services, which are a necessity, really, if you're going to have an efficient and an effective functional program of any sort, particularly in the instructional field. Because, as I once facetiously said, the whole idea of the ideal in education being Mark Hopkins, a famous educator, on one end of a log and a student on the other, doesn't make much sense at 50 degrees below zero. The expansion of the program here is very noticeable. If any person has been here as long as 10 to a dozen years, you will know that we had only a university in embryo back a dozen years ago. Now we have a university in fact. In just the fine arts field, for example, if you find out that but in 1960, there were only the faint beginnings, the things that were really stimulated by a grant that my predecessor, Dr. Patty, got from the Carnegie Foundation to bring a distinguished artist to campus, to bring a distinguished musician to campus, a distinguished philosopher, a distinguished language teacher, a distinguished librarian, and so forth. And these were for short terms of a half a year to a full academic year. And out of this initial thrust, we've built a splendid music department for an institution of our size, one of the best, I would say, in the country. We've built a very substantial art instruction program. We have developed, I think, an excellent program in dramatics. In all of the performing and creative arts, even in the creative writing, where we've had our ups and downs, we have had substantial development in the writing of magazine articles and in photojournalism. We've had less success in fiction and in poetry and in the writing of drama. We've had a little, but not what we had hoped. That's been one of the things that we still have yet to build. In the field of philosophy, I think when I came here, there was one quarter-time person. I believe this was the wife of one of the English teachers that taught one course in philosophy one semester each year. It was practically nothing. The music was only one man who ran the choir, and then we had a sergeant from the old Ladd Air Force Base that came over and conducted the band. The orchestra was a part of the community, and the director was from the high school. We had very little connection with it. I mention these things because actually we had a choir of the North and a good one, but that was a music department. There was virtually no instruction available. There was very little in the field of language. We had some German and some French. We now have the wonderful linguistic program here for in the native languages, which is one of the finest in the country, I think, of its sort, and perhaps in the world. And we have extended it into Japanese and into Russian, into Spanish, and on occasion we have taught Icelandic and Hebrew and some of the Scandinavian languages in addition to Icelandic. So we have really quite a notable linguistic program going here. Dr. Krauss has been very much responsible for a good portion of it, and Dr. Gordon, too, for other portions of it. In the field of the history and political science, I think we had two people when I came, one of whom was half-time political science. It was in a single department, a two-man department. Now it's pretty substantial history department, and likewise in political science, and they're separated into two departments. I could go on. We had no mechanical engineering when I came here at all, none at all. Now we have a small but a growing mechanical engineering. We had no electronic technician program either. The whole development of the community college, while it was established and made a beginning, it was an evening program, vocational, technical, part-time only, run in the local high school buildings. Now it's something quite different. It's fairly modern and fairly extensive. We had 8 commencements this year, and I get a kick out of this because people come up and say to the regents, if you hadn't brought it to us, we never would have been a college student. Now, I could say the same thing in various other areas. I think we've developed an intercollegiate athletic competition program, again, part of the creative and the performing arts. We have developed, in the field of education, a very substantial program of training of teachers, especially teachers for rural areas of Alaska. We've got economics and accounting on the road, where there were very small operations previously. Our mathematics has grown, and instead of being just a service course, it has a strength and dignity of its own, as has the field of physics. Our chemistry is now recognized by the American Chemical Society, and such recognition comes to about one out of three institutions in the country, I think, of major stature. And this is, we are recognized by the American Chemical Society. We have begun the program in the health sciences. We have a cooperative program with the University of Washington School of Medicine, known as WAMI. And we are actually training first-year medical students here, and that is growing and seems to be a very dramatic success. I think in the whole field of biological sciences, we have considerably expanded our program and greatly strengthened it, particularly in the upper division and the graduate level. The whole program at the upper division and graduate level has been very much strengthened because we've been able to strengthen the library as well as the faculty. Now, you cannot develop your programs unless you have good faculty. And I think we have been able here to bring together quite a distinguished small faculty, quite a distinguished one. And it has acquired a stability. You'll notice now that increasingly people have built their own homes. They put down their roots. They're staying here. This is where they expect to make their career. And it's added great stability to our faculty situation. So it's in these two areas that I feel the greatest gain has been made. Now, none of it would have been possible if we had not the facilities of a modern nature and the sophisticated equipment as a place for them to work. And if we had not been able to gain support from the state to improve the conditions of employment. See, there was no tenure, there was no sabbatical leave program here until about 1964, I think. The library, when it came, was about 48,000 volumes. It must be now close to 400,000 on this campus. I don't have the exact number. We're acquiring them 2,000 or more copies a month. And the libraries, through very fine, effective leadership of Ted Ryberg, throughout the state, the community colleges, regional centers are growing. So I think these are the answers. In public relations, the university's become visible where it was virtually ignored except by loyal alumni and some local merchants in the regions and one or two politicians. It's become so visible that it has come in for a great deal of attention, some of it quite critical. But, you know, that's, in a way, a very healthy sign. They don't consider the institution moribund. They suddenly discovered it, and they want to do a great deal more. And so I think that the attention being paid to us by the people of the state through their elected representatives is, in the long run, all to the good, although part of it has been on the frustrating side.
Dr. Wood, each of us has frustrations and disappointments in a job, and after 13 years of, say, battling with the legislature sometimes and sparring with faculty and other parts of the administration, how would you describe say several of the disappointments or things that you would prefer to do but haven't been able to do?
One of the basic things I haven't been able to do is a general one of setting up a development office and manning it with full-time personnel, because I think it would more than pay off, because increasingly we must look to sources other than tax money paid into the general fund of the state to do those special things that are on the plus side for any institution. I think it is an obligation of the taxpaying citizen to support a higher educational institution in its basics. But when it comes to those special things which give it distinction, which give it spirit, if you please, then I think you've got to raise these from outside sources, foundations and private citizens and whatnot. And while we've done a magnificent job, we being the faculty, in raising funds on contract research, contract training programs, contract public service, we've not been able to spend the time in getting those very meaningful gifts to the university. Now, some of them come to us normally. I suppose we raise $100,000 or more a year in just straight gifts without strings attached. But much more needs to be done in scholarships. Much more needs to be done in special gifts for a variety of things to improve the university. Okay, that's one failure. And the next one is, in one of the departments I have, frankly, failed to develop the strength that it ought to have. Not that it is without some strength, but I wanted it to get to the top rather than to hang in at a level of mediocrity, and that's the English department. And frankly, it has not developed the way it should. And this, of course, has been a great frustration to me because that's my field. And on two occasions, I tried to help out by acting as head of the department. And while that calmed things down a bit, it certainly didn't result in any permanent gain. And it may have been a handicap. I just don't know. I'd wanted to build a creative writing department. I'd wanted to build a very fine graduate level program in literature and literary studies, and I had wanted to have the very best program in the fundamentals of correct writing and in a real strong program and understanding the printed word, for instance, that you could develop as a part of the English department. And this has never gotten really above the surface. The speech department has made some gains. We still have a good long way to go. We've always been pretty good in the dramatics, the theater arts. I'd hope to have a speech correction program, speech therapy, and we never got the money for that on a sustained basis. 1 year we were going fine, and then the monies became short and we couldn't go ahead. And I'd want to do forensic program, and we got a start on that, and that failed to persist. And I'd wanted to get the fundamentals of good speaking, oral communication in place, and that's still in a beginning stage. So that's those two things I failed on. I wanted very, very badly to raise funds to have a major museum of the North, and I haven't been able to do that. Incidentally, one thing that we've done in addition to the library, which I think is a tremendous success, and that is the operation of our excuse me, can you stop it a minute? I got a book. Development of our archives, that is a very great value to all Alaska, and of course it's due to your very special expertise in handling it with the good backing of Ted Ryberg. I think that's one of our greater glories in the last few years. I've also wanted to have a field house here because for winter sports, particularly intramural, we need more space than we have. I wanted ice skating on a year-round basis so we could have not only some hockey played intramurally and as well as intercollegiately, but that we could have speed skating and figure skating for all ages and to serve the entire community as much as our swimming pool does now. Those two things I had very, very much wanted. The other thing that we need in the way of facilities is a new teaching laboratory for science facility, which we have planned for this campus. Rest of it, I think, is developing. We need other things, of course, for Anchorage. We need a great deal more, and we need them in Juneau. And we've got to start in the community colleges, and they will continue to expand, I think, slowly as the population increases. Those have been my main frustrations, getting the development program set up, developing the English department, and to some extent some more of the speech, and developing the facilities for the museum and for the field house sort of thing, the physical and recreational aspects of it. Those are my biggest failures. That, I suppose, and failing to convince all of the legislature that they should support higher education to the level of 10% of whatever the general appropriation is each year. And we're about 6.5% now, or maybe a little better. We haven't yet put the priority on higher education that I think it merits in a developing state.
We're just about to the end of this tape, so why don't we stop right here?
Okay.
Well, that's enough for today, don't you?